Good evening, everyone. Tonight, we're going to talk about empathy, what empathy means, how we can grow more empathy. These are muscles. This is an emotional intelligent tool. It's a skill. It's like an emotional muscle that if you can grow your empathy, your empathetic skills, not only are your relationships more successful, they are more enriched, there's more meaning, more connection, more juice, more love, more understanding between you and the people that are very special to you in your life. I mean, empathy is needed for business. Empathy is needed in families. Empathy is needed in love and marriage. As a marriage coach, I see a lot of problems that are caused because we do not have enough empathy for one another. In fact, we want them to respond the way we would respond rather than really putting ourselves in their shoes and understanding how they might feel about a situation or a person. So tonight I want to kind of delve deep, and then there'll be questions later. For you. And I also have a empathy quiz. So I really hope you've got some paper and a pen for yourself so you can take the quiz a little bit later on. So you may have heard an American Indian proverb that said never criticize a man or a woman until you have walked a mile in their moccasins. And I really love this because empathy is the ability to accurately put yourself in someone else's shoes, to understand their point of view, but from their perspective, from being in their skin, in their shoes, and being able to communicate and understand these feelings and the perceptions from the other person's point of view. This is a very critical skill for all leaders to have. If you are a successful leader, you're probably someone that excels and you have those soft skills, we say, emotional intelligence. So empathy is a cornerstone of emotional intelligence. There is no such thing as emotional intelligence if you can't be empathetic towards the suffering or even just the feelings or point of view of someone else. I really think that some of the problems that we have today in our society is because we cannot empathize with other people. So it's also been researched a lot, like empathy right now. It's a hot subject. There's a buzz. I'll share with you some of the research that's been going on in empathy and some links that you can check out. And also in classrooms with children, if you're educators, it's very, very interesting what's going on right now worldwide with this whole habit of empathy. So let's discuss it in terms of sympathy, because sometimes people ask me, is empathy like compassion? Is empathy like pity? Is empathy like sympathy? Like, what's the big difference? Both compassion and sympathy is about feeling, is you having feelings for someone else, seeing their distress and realizing that they are suffering, and you're kind of removed, and you can say, oh, that's too bad. You know, that's too bad you lost your job, or that's too bad that that terrible thing happened to you. Compassion has a little bit more juice, more power, because compassion has an element of action. And so it's like, you know, it's not like empathy, but you can have compassion. It's a little bit removed, not as removed as sympathy, but it's got an element of action in the word compassion. But empathy, by contrast, is about experiencing those feelings for yourself as if you were that person through the power of imagination. Okay, so picture this. You're at a movie and you start watching this movie and you get engrossed in the storyline And, you know, you start loving one of the characters, the protagonist, and then the protagonist has, you know, a fall or some tragedy. And then they start to cry or they start to feel a lot of pain. And then you feel pain and you're sitting in a movie theater. This is not real. This is a story. And yet it can activate empathy for you because you in that moment can put yourself in their shoes. And that's what empathy is. It's like, if I were you, I would feel the same way as you. And it really is such an important building block for communication and for relationships. You know, to have meaningful relationships, you have to be able to give that empathy to someone else, for them to feel understood, for them to feel loved, for them to feel not judged, for them to feel like they're okay in the world. So that's a few beginning words on empathy. It's also different from pity. Pity is kind of low on the frequency scale. No one wants pity. Years ago, I remember having a dialogue with someone who said, you know, there's a lot of people who are on the street and they don't need to be on the street. They could go to these shelters. They can go to food banks. They can go get food. You know, we live in Canada. There's lots of opportunities. And I remember talking to someone years ago who had lost everything. And they had a job, they had a family, they were successful. They had a drinking problem, and the drinking problem made them lose their family. And then they lost their job. They lost all their money. They lost everything. And they ended up on the street, this man that I recall. And having a really awesome conversation with him, he told me, I don't want to go to those places, Grace, because I don't want their pity. And some people see it that way, that, you know, handouts are pity. This is another reason why, you know, Christmas time or Thanksgiving drives, a lot of the handouts, a lot of the giving that we do is anonymous, because the families that are receiving it don't want the pity from other people. So empathy is not pity. And so you don't want to confuse the two. As George Bernard Shaw pointed out, do not do unto others as you would have them do unto you, because they might have different tastes. So empathy is about discovering those tastes. Empathy is not even the golden rule. Some people think, you know, just treat other people the way you want to be treated, which is the golden rule. And it's not that. Daniel Goleman, who is the author of the Emotional Intelligence series of books, says that empathy is the ability to understand other people's emotions. He says that at a deeper level, it's about defining, understanding, and reacting to the concerns and needs that underlie people's emotional responses and reactions. And in industry and in companies, you really need your leadership, your managers, to understand these nuances and the subtleties in our dialogue, in our conversation. And skilled people can do this. And some people just kind of ignore it. Just like, oh, there's a little bit of emotion there. I'm just going to ignore that. I'm going to go on to the next point. So being able to kind of not ignore it, but doing it with finesse and doing it in style and doing it with gentleness and sensitivity is what empathy is all about. Tim Minchin said that empathy is a skill that can be developed, and most interpersonal skills, to some people, empathy comes naturally. I think for me, empathy, I'm an empath. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know what that means. I'm sure some of you on the call today know what that means. Being an empath means that you can relate a lot to how other people feel. And since I was a little girl, I've always had people, you know, telling me their stories, telling me their pain. I knew that I was going to be a therapist, you know, guide, a leader, someone giving advice, someone, you know, giving counsel. My whole life, I've known that. And I think it's because I have had a natural amount of empathy for the suffering of other people. I remember years ago, one of the best compliments I received is like, this woman was a stranger. She started telling me her story. And she said, you know, just telling it to you, I just feel better. And I hadn't done anything. But I think I kind of my facial expressions and my body language and my oohs and my ahs and your face, the way your face moves. She said, you know, I can just talk to you and I feel better. And I take that as an incredible gift that I have. And I'm privileged to have this and it helps me in the work that I do. But some people just don't have that. You know, there's also a downside to being an empath who feels too much. For example, I can't go to the movie theaters and listen to, like if I select a movie, I'm very, very careful about selecting a movie, but I'm very, very sensitive to violence, any kind of cruelty, violence. I can't watch it. It's very harmful to me. I remember years ago, back in the days when we had Blockbuster, remember those days? On a Friday night, I remember going to Blockbuster and I was going up and down those aisles and I was looking like number one, number two, number three, and like the top 10 Blockbuster movies that everybody in my community was watching are movies that I could not bring home because I already knew that I was going to suffer and it was going to be too painful for me. So for me, I actually suffer. It's painful. So there's like the downside of feeling too much, you know, and then there's not feeling enough and then you can't connect with people. So what we want to do is we want to exercise these muscles. You know, we don't want to just be cold to the suffering of others, but we don't also, I've had to learn how to have emotional boundaries. I've had to learn a lot about not allowing other people's psychic energy into my field. I've had to learn about energy and not taking it on and not keeping problems of other people like inside of me because that's not healthy. So over the last decade, neuroscientists have identified a 10-section empathy circuit in our brains, which if it's damaged can curtail our ability to understand what other people are feeling. I believe that people who commit crimes or hurt people, like, you know, in a very, you know, in a fundamental way, not just emotional hurts, because we're all capable of doing that, but I'm talking about sociopaths and people who, you know, kill, are people who, you know, research shows their empathy centers are just totally destroyed. They don't have any empathy. So if you're feeling pain and if they're being cruel, they don't get it. They don't get the pain of what they're causing you. So yeah, it is in the brain. And in fact, they have found that elephants have more empathy than some human beings. Elephants are such gentle, gentle creatures. And they've done all kinds of experiments with mirrors and elephants and how they have this empathy. Dogs have empathy. Dogs know when you're having a bad day. They just get up and they come to you. I was coaching this man this week and he has a beautiful border collie. No, not border collie. I forget the type of dog. But as soon as he started to tear up as he was telling me a story from his boyhood. And all of a sudden, his dog got up and comes straight over to him. So animals have a real ability to be empathetic, and it's quite beautiful, which is why I think so many of us are addicted to having our dogs and our animals and our cats. I don't know about cats, how empathetic cats are. I'm sorry to you cat people. I'm a dog person. And so my experience of cats, not very empathetic, more aloof. But some people swear by their cats, so no problemo. Evolutionary biologists like Franz De Waal, W-A-A-L, have shown that because we are social animals, we have evolved to take care of each other, just like our primate cousins. and has revealed that we are naturally primed for empathy because of our attachment relationships. And you can watch this with monkeys and apes, primates, the first 2 years of life, how they take care of their young and how they, you know, they bring their babies to their chest and they hold them tight and very, very, you know, they develop these amazing strong bonds. So we know now the people who have really a strong and healthy empathy are people that were allowed to make these strong bonds with their caretakers, their parents, and the people who love them and take care of them. So that's a little bit of a preamble on empathy. Now I want to give you the goods. I want to give you 8 habits of empathetic people. So hopefully you're taking some notes and you're writing these down. Let me check you guys out. Everything's cool. Yes. Awesome. So number one, habit one of empathetic people. They are curious about strangers. So think about it. You know, you see a tattoo that looks really interesting on someone and you might comment and you might say, you know, what's the story behind that tattoo? I remember once years ago, I was with my mother and we were at Tim Hortons and the guy that was serving us had a huge spacer in his ear, like this huge big hole. And my mother, bless her heart, does not understand that. Like it's not an earring, so she couldn't understand it. And she just goes, "Why you got that?" And I was like mortified. I was like, "Oh my God, Ma." And she goes, "Why you got that? You know, it's is a fashion? Is a fashion for you? What?" And I thought he was going to get, you know, angry and tell her to F off. And instead, he starts talking to her about why he got it, how he likes it, what it does for him. And my mother just sat there and she's just listening. And I'm just like watching the two of these people, the two of them just talking about this. So my mother is one of these people who is so curious about other people. And she'll just go right up and ask questions. Well, here it is, habit one, to be curious about strangers, empathetic people. They have this insatiable curiosity. They will talk to the person sitting next to them on the subway, on the bus. They start conversations in grocery stores. They have the gift of chit-chat and they can ask questions, but it's not a prying type of question. It's almost like, "I'm taking interest in you. You know, I'm interested." And I think that's one of the greatest compliments, is someone interested in us. I mean, isn't that how we fall in love? Is the first person says, "Hey, you know, like, you know, you're kind of interesting. And like, you know, what's going on with you?" And asking questions. They find people interesting. And when they hear a story, they go like, "Wow, that's awesome. I am very interested in people and the kinds of amazing things they do." My son right now and his fiance, they have bought this amazing van and they're juicing it all up and ramping it all up and getting it ready because they're going to take it to Alaska and across the country and down the California coast, and they want to go and see different places. And I find that hugely interesting. Like, wow, courageous. But, you know, there are people doing amazing, interesting things all around you. And I encourage you to be interested. Martin Seligman, who is the happiness guru down at the University of Pennsylvania, he studied a lot about optimism. He's the one that's the founder of the positive psychology movement. So Marty and his group, he has identified curiosity as a key character strength that can enhance life satisfaction. So it's another reason to be curious, because curiosity is good for you, okay? But not in a way that you're gonna interrogate and be annoying, but more as a way of being respectful, but interested in people's lives. So habit one of a highly empathetic people, they're curious about strangers, okay? Give yourself a score out of 10. See how curious you are. So give yourself a little score out of 10. Habit number two, they are fully present with other people. I don't know if you've noticed that you're having a conversation with someone and all of a sudden their telephone goes ding and they stop what they're saying, they stop listening to you and they go to their phone and they have to go and see and then they have to go respond on the phone right away. That person is not fully present with you and we feel it. You know, it's a bit of a slight. Sure, if you're expecting important, you know, dings, if you are playing hooky and you're supposed to be at work and you've got a ding from your boss, absolutely. But I'm talking in general. There are some people who have this very, very bad habit of being distracted when they're talking to you. And it's really annoying. And if you're empathetic, you are zeroed in, baby. You're making eye contact. You're paying attention. You're listening. You are present. Your energy is saying, I'm here. I'm present. What you're saying is really important to me. So, can you grasp someone's emotional state and needs? Whether it's a friend who's just been diagnosed with something awful, or a spouse who's angry at something that happened at work, or your child who, you know, had some difficulty at school, can you just sit with them? So being present with other people doesn't mean solving their problems, doesn't mean giving them advice or a prescription. It means just sitting there with them with whatever it is that's going on with them. It's being mindful and present. And I know this sounds a little bit kind of subtle and it kind of sounds, you know, like it's not very scientific or concrete, but I think you all know when someone is sitting with you and they're present to your pain, to your joy, they're present to the story you're telling them about your grandchild. They're just present with you. And I think it's a really wonderful gift. So that's the empathy. Habit two. Habit three, an empathetic person will challenge the prejudice and stereotypes that they hear, okay? We all have these collective labels about other people. We all have these assumptions, you know, when we say, you know, person who's like a single mom or a welfare mom or a bum or trailer park trash, or we have all these kind of words we use, we throw out in our vocabulary, and it kind of gives us this image. And sometimes we kind of label people with these words. Empathetic people, they challenge themselves to use different descriptors and different words, and they challenge their own preconceptions and their prejudice. I think that's what's going on right now around the world with the Black Lives Matter, with the violence that we have seen towards Aboriginal women in Canada. You know, I think that we're all paying attention to this, and rightly so. We need to bring more empathy in our police departments. We need to bring more empathy in our school systems. And I'll tell you at the end of the talk, some amazing people who are doing just that. Habit number four. This is a person who, to develop their empathy, has mastered the art of active listening. Okay, so what is active listening? They take the time to really understand when someone is speaking to them. They don't jump to finish the sentence. They don't roll their eyes. They don't look around. This person here is active listening. Are people who say like, wow, that, you know, every now and then they'll throw things in there like, that sucks, or that must have hurt, or I would have hated that. To let the person know that, like, I'm right here, I'm listening. So that's called, the technique is called reflecting. I'm reflecting back what I'm getting from you. You know, that sucks. Or yeah, I would be angry too. Okay. Or reflecting also can sound like, what I'm hearing you say is this. So it sounds like, you know, your mother is driving you crazy. You know, what I'm hearing you is that right? Affirming is also when you're smiling and nodding, little brief verbal affirmations like, or I see, I get that, you know, go on, I'm here. Also encouraging, you know, and then what happened? And let the person know that you're right there with them as they're telling the story. I can't tell you how annoying it is when you're out at a restaurant and there's maybe like six or more people, and one person starts telling a story, and it's a really great story. And then the waiters will arrive, and then they bring the food, and so everything gets interrupted, and the story is like hung out to dry. And it's very often, it's like, you know, very respectful, I find. Empathetic people will say, and your story, would you like to finish the story? We'll go to the person who was talking. Sometimes I just sit back and watch, and I'm amazed that nobody will pick up the thread. I'm just amazed that nobody will, you know, like, obviously they weren't listening because we got interrupted. The story never got finished. And then no one said anything. So I always like to kind of say, you know, you were in the middle of a story. Can I finish the story? And I think that's very respectful. And it's an empathetic skill, a listening, active listening skill, to be able to kind of pick up the thread for people. But just pay attention to when someone starts a story, then there's interruptions. And sometimes if you have children, you can be interrupted like 15 times. And it's just really great and respectful to give that person a chance to finish the story. They also pause. Pause is also, you know, very, very powerful. Empathetic people know how powerful silence can be. You know, I remember one of my favorite CBC hosts was Peter Zowski back in the day when I was a student. And then when I was working at CBC, Peter Zowski was my hero, and I thought that he was so amazing because he never rescued silence. So in the radio business, we say that a good interviewer is someone that when someone is talking and there's like a little bit of a dead air, nobody in radio wants dead air, because it's like, you know, the people at Master Control, if they see or they hear dead air, it's like, oh, something's wrong. So Peter Zowski would never rescue the silence. And right after that pause or that silent pause, the person would bring out the best radio, you know, the award-winning radio, the emotion. You know, sometimes you just need to pause to get that real juicy bit to come out of your heart. And that's when the deep connection happens between people. And so as a listener, you're listening, and then there'd be a pause, and then that really good, meaty nugget would come out. And so empathetic people don't rescue silence. You just can sit with that pause, and you can just, you know, just be. That's habit four, active listening. Habit five, they tune into nonverbal communication. So what does that mean? Communication is not just the words. Our words that we use are only 7% of the message. 55% is my body language. It's my it's my eye movement. It's, you know, how I touch, you know, if I touch my face, if I twirl my hair. 38% is the tone of voice. It's the sound, you know. So it's the tonality, it's the sarcasm. You know, can I help you? Can I help you? You know, I can help you. All of that is 38% of your message. So the weakest link is the words we use. So if you want to be empathetic, two ways of saying it, you need to tune in to what people are communicating beyond the words. Okay. I think last week I talked about the one time I was in a department store at Christmas time, and there was a young woman who was learning her job, and she was, you know, frazzled, and she was really working hard to try to make everybody happy and getting things, you know, packaged up and rung through the till. And I saw that there was this tear coming down her face. And I was like really confused. I'm like, is that sweat? Like, what is that? It was a tear. She was so stressed out. She was trying to block the tears and push the tears down, but her body language was betraying and the tear came down and she was communicating. People communicate all the time at meetings. If you work with people, even on Zoom calls, you know, people who are really, really distant, who are just like really not engaged. Can you imagine if I was talking to you from way over here? You know, like, hi. There's people who do the eye roll. You're like, okay, here we go again. There's people who do a lot of sign. You know, there's people who have the pencil and they have some like annoying thing. They're doing this. Those are nonverbal messages that are saying basically, I'm not happy. I want to be heard. The words are not being spoken, but they're speaking in other ways. So if you are an empathetic person, you're going to tune into that and you're going to mirror that. I remember years ago, I was coaching someone who was a server in a restaurant. And she wanted to say, you know, like, she goes, I'm very sensitive. And, sometimes people get really annoyed with me and I take it all in and then I go back and I start crying and she goes, I'm a mess. And I taught her how to just use the technique of mirroring. I said, well, when you go to your table and if they're giving you nonverbal communication that they're unhappy, just go straight for the jugular. Just ask them straight out, is something wrong? Can I get something for you? Because there's people who are very direct with their communication and there's people who are very passive and people who are passive aggressive. They don't speak directly, but they will, you know, huff and puff and they will have annoying things or they'll just do things or they'll roll their eye. And the best thing to do is just to ask the question, is everything okay? Can I get something for you? And if they say, oh, no, everything's okay. Then just say, well, it seems like you're not very happy right now. You know, like you're rolling your eyes or you're huffing and puffing. I just want to make sure that everything's okay. So if you kind of address the passive aggressive behavior, nonverbal communication, we say that you're empathetic, but you have to do it in a nice way. Because if you do it in a negative way or a sarcastic way, then you've lost. Then, you know, you're basically leaking your inner bitch or your inner jerk, but you're not connecting empathetically with people. So you don't want to ignore any emotion that people might be leaking out without their knowing it. Because we're leaking it. When we're not being direct and we're passive aggressive, then it's leaking out. Our upset is leaking out. And that's really hard to handle sometimes. So the best thing to do is to address it head on. So tuning in to people's nonverbal communication is an empathy skill. And this is also, it's the gateway to productive problem solving. When someone can come up to you and saying, listen, at the meeting, it seemed like you weren't really happy with that solution. Can we talk about this a little bit more? I want to be very open to this. I think will be really great. People will love it. Okay, that's habit 5. Hope you guys are enjoying this. Yes? All right, habit 6. They replace giving advice with asking questions. So that might sound like a little bit like being curious, but instead of offering their opinion, empathetic people ask questions to better understand and to clarify the other person's perspective. For example, how do you feel about that? Can you tell me more about that? What do you mean? What would be helpful according to you? What do you make of this? So questions that are basically getting more facts, you know, instead of you jumping in and solving the problem, you know, and getting that little ego boost, is to basically ask clarifying questions to show that you are exercising your empathy muscles. Excuse me. This is my Prosecco and water for the day. All right. So that's habit six. Habit seven, they speak in terms of we, not me. So empathetic people or empathetic, you know, family leaders or industry leaders, they don't talk so much about like, you know, me or I, but more like an us, more a team, more inclusivity. And that's the empathy, is more inclusivity. Research has shown actually that changing your language to us or we is a step toward adopting an empathetic attitude, and people immediately warm up, you know, and they bring the wall down. They stop that, you know, they bring that wall down and they stop shutting down on you, is if you have more that us and the we, and making people feel empowered and feeling like they're part of a team, a part of a family. So when you want to really connect with someone, creating a bond by talking about your shared goals, you know, let's talk about what we're going to do next to solve this. You know, how are we going to get through this? During the COVID-19 crisis, global crisis, I hear a lot. I think it's a little bit overused though. It's, you know, we're in this together. You know, we're in this together. We're in this together. You know, we're all doing our bit so we can be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. And so, you know, like there's obviously intelligence in that strategy. It does make sense. It does make people feel less alone, less us versus them. And we bring people together to feel more like we're a we, we're a family, we're an us. So research shows that people who speak this way have more empathy and can connect with people, and those emotional muscles are exercised. Okay, and number eight, habit eight. Empathetic people imagine other people's point of view. They practice a skill called perspective taking. In other words, they routinely will, in their mind's eye, you know, imagine what it might be like to be in those people's shoes or other people's shoes, what fears they might be facing, how it feels. Doing this exercise yourself by practicing internally to assume a person's point of view, you know. I'll give you an example. My dad, who is like just one of my heroes. My dad is amazing. He's 90, but when he was 86, I showed up at the house. I was driving the driveway and my dad was on the roof. And I just got really upset with him. I started yelling at him and saying like, you know, and I started saying like, you know, what are you doing on the roof? Like, oh my God, are you gonna kill yourself? And blah, 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 blah. And then he was like going, what? And I felt like I needed to kind of come up with some facts, as like 86-year-old men should not be on the roof. And I said to him, you're old, you're 86 years old. And he said to me, I'm not old. And later on, when I kind of, you know, exercised my empathy, I'm thinking to myself, like my age, you know, I'm old to my children. I would not want my children at any age to say to me, Mom, you're old. You shouldn't be able to do that and that and that. You can't do that. You can't dress like that. You can't wear that color. You can't put your hair in a ponytail. I would hate it if my kids said that to me. And so I just kind of, I changed. I remember that day when he was 86, I changed it. I never said that to him again. I'm always saying, you're my inspiration. You're amazing. You can do whatever you want, but you got to be safe. And you know, what I really should have said is, I'm worried about you, but not point out to him that he's old. So putting yourself in other people's shoes and imagining what it must be like, you know, and you know, I do look at my parents' contemporaries and, you know, just look at them and the way they talk and what they care about and how they fight. And it's no different than my generation. It's no different than my kids' generation. It's a perspective. I think there is a lot of ageism. I think there's a lot of prejudice. Last spring, I was part of a conference at Niagara College, and it was all on aging gracefully and all about ageism. And there was quite a few speakers. I was one of the speakers. And, you know, talking about how, you know, we need to challenge these stereotypes about older people, because older people today are very productive and they're amazing. And, you know, we got to stop looking at them that because their body is falling apart or whatever, they're kind of hunched over, or because they've got wrinkles, that somehow they don't have value, or they, you know, don't have clout. We really need to kind of, you know, shift this a lot. Same thing we have towards, you know, people of color, or people of different sexual persuasion, or, you know, Aboriginal people who came here first, who were here first. You know, we really need to kind of shake up some of these ways of looking at them and change our lens and look at them through different eyes and different glasses. So that this, the power of imagination, it really kind of goes hand in hand with having empathy. Because when you can really, really imagine, I mean, I think actors are all amazing with their empathy skills, because they have to be able to kind of imagine what's it like to be this character. And then they have to produce emotion on the spot under hot lights, and, you know, with the camera rolling, and they've got to be convincing. And so that empathy, it's being an actor. It's being an actor getting into the role of the character, and like, what might it be like for this person? This is really essential. This is what's missing in our conversations and our dialogue today. And this is why our communities are at war with one another. So we've got to really activate imagination. So that's habit 8, my darlings. And I have an empathy quiz now for you guys. So if you have your pen and paper, I'm going to ask you some questions, and you're going to just go yes or no. And the question here is, are you an empath? Okay. So empathetic people tend to be more generous. They're concerned with other people's welfare. They tend to have happier relationships, greater personal well-being. Empathy also improves leadership ability and communication. So there's, you can definitely Google what's going on with empathy these days, because it really is amazing, the buzz that's happening. Okay, are you an empath? Question number 1. I easily feel sad when people around me feel sad. Yes or no? Okay. So you can put check or X for number 1. Number 2, before criticizing somebody, I try to imagine how I would feel if I were in his or her place. Okay, check or X, or yes or no. We're gonna want to figure out how many yeses you have. There's 22 of these. Okay, number 3, it's difficult for me to understand what makes my friends happy. Yes or no. 4, it upsets me to see someone being treated disrespectfully. Yes or no. When someone else is feeling excited, I tend to get excited too. Yes or no? I have tender, concerned feelings for people less fortunate than me. Yes or no? If I'm going too fast, you can always hit replay later on my YouTube channel or on my website, okay? Or on the podcast, you can always hit replay. Number 7, I sometimes find it difficult to see things from the other person's point of view. Yes or no? This is all about how empathetic you are. Number 8, I find that I am in tune with other people's moods. Yes or no? Number 9, if I'm sure I'm right about something, I don't waste much time listening to other people's arguments. Number 10, if someone tells me about an event that made him or her happy, I can easily understand why that event made him or her happy. Yes or no. Number 11, I try to look at everyone's side of a disagreement before I make a decision. Number 12, I become irritated when someone cries. I can easily think, Actually, number 12, I become irritated when someone cries. To have empathy, you're going to want to have it. You want that to be no. Okay. So in terms of empathy, I think the second half here, if you have no, it's going to give you high empathy. If you get irritated when someone cries, you don't have empathy. Number 13, I can easily think about events that will make my friends happy. Yes is empathy. No is not. Number 14, I sometimes try to understand my friends better by imagining how things look from their perspective. That's empathetic. That's a yes. No is no empathy. Number 15, I get a strong urge to help when I see someone who is upset. A yes is empathy. Number 16, I believe that there are two sides to every question and I try to look at them both. A yes is empathy. Number 17, when I see that my friend is sad about something, I feel sad too. That's empathy. Number 18, I have a hard time predicting what situations will make other people happy. If that is a yes, it's no empathy. So number 18, you're going to want to have a no to have empathy, okay? When I'm upset at someone, I usually try to put myself in his or her shoes for a while. If you get a yes for that, you have empathy. So it's positive. When I see someone being taken advantage of, I feel protective towards them. A yes, you have high empathy. 21, I remain unaffected when someone close to me is happy. If you have a yes, it means you have poor empathy. Okay? If you remain unaffected by someone's happy emotion, then you don't have empathy. So a yes is low empathy. A no would be high empathy. Number 22, I enjoy making other people feel good. And if you got yes, then you have a high empathy. So I think you're starting to understand, you know, how this works. So I'm going to close now with a few last thoughts about empathy. And one of the things that I want you to understand in doing some of the research about this is that alongside reading and arithmetic, empathy has become a new literacy. And it's showing up in schools. It's showing up in classrooms, in political arenas, in marketing. Empathy is this little known giant. It's naturally hardwired into our brain. And when it's harnessed, it plays a crucial role in change making, in solving systemic problems, in relationship, in emotional intelligence. There's all kinds of people who have studied it. One guy is Bill Drayton, and he is the father of social entrepreneurship. And he says that empathy is a key business survival skill because it means that if you have empathy, that you, then you will be able to lead successful teams. You'll be a solid leader. He's created this influential foundation called Ashoka. And I want to give you the web link to it. It's called startempathy.org. And it's taking his ideas to business leaders, politicians, educators worldwide. So that's a really cool one. It's called startempathy, all one word, .org. Check it out. And in closing, I would like to highlight the work of a Toronto-based fellow Canadian, Mary Gordon, and she has done amazing things to educate children on having greater empathy. Her organization is called Roots of Empathy. Check this out, people, because you will be blown away. Rootsofempathy.org. It's a world-renowned program that brings babies, little tiny babies, into the classrooms to teach, to help teach emotional literacy to kids today. At the heart of the program is bringing the attachment relationship into the classroom so the kids get attached to the baby. The baby comes for a whole year Every month for 9 months, they bring the infant into the classroom with the parents and accompanied by a Roots of Empathy instructor. And the children watch and love and grow over a whole school year. And they get attached to this baby. And it's really beautiful. In closing, I want to leave you with some of Mary Gordon's wisdom, what she has said. I was very inspired to read about Roots of Empathy, and it started in Toronto. She says that for years, I worked with families who were very abusive to their children. Over time, I came to realize that all of the suffering that the children collected, whether it was domestic violence or child abuse or neglect, was a result of the absence of empathy in the parent. Her final words, and the words I'm going to leave you here with tonight: I think we in North America are emotionally illiterate, she says. We worry about our traditional literacy rates, but we should be more worried, I think, about our emotional literacy, our ability to connect to ourselves and to one another. In schools, we teach people to read, but we don't teach these kids to relate to other people. And that's why they lose themselves. They're lost in their relationships. They are lost in themselves. They will not have success in their jobs, and we will not have peace in the world. It's our mountains and our continents and our oceans that divide us, but it is our similarities through our emotions that connect us. Aren't those beautiful words, inspirational words, to end my webinar tonight on empathy. Thank you so much for joining us, and stick around for some questions if you have some questions, and I always do a Q&A. And thank you very much for being part of this community and wanting to learn, and bless you, and we'll talk again real soon.